All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, also the phone line, 913-586-7965. What's going on, man?
Hey, not too much.
You good?
Yeah, all good. Nothing new to report. I don't think I didn't get
no
any kind of
trouble. Security update or
no
anything?
I didn't have to. Okay. I have to go speak to a class tonight at UMKC. A former, and not even a former professor of mine, just a professor at UMKC is having like a career panel about people who work in the communications field, and so they're opening that up to some people. And I, you know, I've decided to just be cold and blunt and honest to these kids tonight.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going to tell them like it is. I'm going to tell them that they should quit and do something else. Give up on this dream.
Says the professor.
It won't happen for you.
So
give up.
So wait, an hour earlier, you're teaching a class on people that are you're teaching them how to get in the industry.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then an hour later, you're speaking to a different group, telling them to not.
So hold on.
Be in the
because the kids
industry.
who are like, screw you, I'll prove you wrong. Those kids are going to make it anyway.
Yeah, a lot of people think that you're just doing.
You got to have that. Oh, I don't want the competition.
Well, or that also you're, that maybe you're doing community service after the incident, and that was the agreement with campus security. If you want it back on campus, now you have to do community service, and that is giving
speak to classes.
Giving tap talks.
At the moment, no, that's not the case. I've also been asked if I have interest in helping revitalize the old student radio station that I had helped found before. I was like, you know, maybe. I think radio is an important medium.
Do they know you have a full-time job?
That's tough to say. I assume they do. When they hired me for the job, I assume that was part of the vetting process.
I just didn't know.
I didn't have to have a master's degree in education or in my career field because I have relevant career
experience.
Yeah, so... Hard to say. We'll find out as time goes on.
Coming up a little bit later on today in the show, we'll be joined by Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. Also, around 11:45, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, expected to address the media. Now that we're in the middle of the week and we get the practices going, maybe get another update on Hollywood Brown. You heard from Nate Taylor yesterday. He thinks he actually will play on Sunday. We'll get more of an update from Andy Reid a little bit later on right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. But let's start with the Royals again, because yesterday in New York, they level up this series against the Yankees. And Seth Lugo, if there were any more concerns still out there.
Remember
about
that whole wall conversation? That can go to die.
Hitting a wall, needing extra days off, all that. Well, he looks like pre-All-Star break Seth Lugo again. He was flat out dominant. And just to do it in that ballpark, which is significant because it's a chance they're right back there in 4 weeks, you know, or 3 weeks. But he was the fourth pitcher ever in that stadium to have seven innings and no runs and no walks and 10 strikeouts. And obviously he didn't even give up more than three hits. So he was just flat out sensational. And it could be the identical series. And of course the result you're hoping for in 3 weeks, if you're the Royals playing right back there.
Yeah, because this very well could be a matchup in the future, which is good to remember. And yeah, Seth Lugo has now started three straight games against Houston, Cleveland, the New York Yankees. We would agree that those are three pretty good teams. Three teams that are going to be in this year's AL playoff field, most likely. I don't see any reason why those three teams won't make it. Mariners have fallen off enough. Royals are still comfortably in a playoff spot as it sits, and the Yankees, maybe after last night, are not leading their division, but still close. 21 innings pitched, so 7 innings a start. 23 strikeouts, so more than a strikeout per inning. And only two earned runs after that time. That's a sub-1 ERA over his last three starts against three teams. If they went through the playoff to the World Series, that might be the exact order of teams they would have to run through in order to get there. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. The best part about this is, I meant to say it yesterday. I was thinking about it last night before the game had started. I wish I had said it in the show, but because that Monday game, I was like, you know, they lost, and I was frustrated with McCarthy, but I was like, you know what? This doesn't feel like a playoff game, and here's why. If it were a three-game series on the road against the Yankees, let me ask you two questions. Three-game series on the road against the Yankees. Does Brady Singer start one of the three games?
No.
Does James McArthur pitch in a high-leverage situation in any of the three games?
Nope.
So it's not a playoff game. It wasn't a good test for where the Royals are against real tests. Now, let's follow up with the same question. In one of the three games against the Yankees, would Seth Lugo start?
Of course.
With Lucas Erceg and Chris Bubich or some of these other guys coming to pitch in a close game? Yeah. So last night was more of a true test. And I know it's like, well, they lost the first one. No, it just was more of what they will line up in a postseason series against the Yankees than the other way around.
Sure.
So tonight and last night and then again tonight kind of give me that feel for where they are against the Yankees.
No, I mean, you're right. We know in a short series, they're going to put out their best pitchers. It's all hands on deck kind of thing. And you're going to utilize, whether it's your perfect lineup, perfect rotation, perfect everything, it is do or die. It's postseason baseball. Also, let's recognize, and I hope they can replicate it, but like, that was also the perfect scenario. You're correct that it'll be Seth Lugo and that they'll only have to use, use Erceg just to close out the game. Sure. I mean, the Royals would love, whoever they're playing in the playoffs, that if you told them that their starting pitcher is giving them 7 innings of shutout baseball and they only have to have 2 relievers, like, well, of course. Yeah, I mean, I would like that every single night for the Royals. Where tonight, I would love Cole Reagans to go 7 innings and they only have to use 2 pitchers. And you're right. That is the personnel that likely will be utilized. But that also last night was the perfect scenario of the dream scenario of what you hope happens in the postseason.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's the perfect result, but also it was a result that they needed in a pressure-packed moment at a time in which they needed the result. And so, like, I understand the idea that, well, yeah, that's the best-case scenario of how that game would hypothetically go, because it probably is, because Seth Lugo was stunningly dominant in that game, but it was also their guy against our guy. And I guess the argument you could make, I don't know the Yankees' rotation quite well enough to know if Marcus Stroman would make a start for them. So like maybe it's not putting their best foot forward. He's been pretty consistently one of the guys on the board for them. So I'd kind of think, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the last night, we'll see how the series wraps up this evening as well, when they take on the Yankees again, right here on 96.5, The Fan, will be the talking point going into this series and for the last 2 months, which was, all right, that's great that they're beating this team below 500 or non-playoff team or whatever it may be. And how many times do we also hear there are new qualifiers that have been placed?
Yes.
Every single time they accomplish something, it's like, well, I said they need to be a good team, but it needs to be this good team.
They got to win the way I want them to win.
They beat the Guardians, but I meant the other good teams. And so it's like, okay, they beat the Yankees last night. If they can win this series, does that calm some of the nerves of some fans that are out there that said, well, they can't beat the upper echelon? There always are new qualifiers. Like if the Royals win this series tonight against the Yankees, well, I want to see what they do when they don't have this happen.
Like, just wait till they face those teams and they don't have Lugo. You're like, what the hell kind of meaning
so
is that?
So I think
they kicked their ass. There doesn't need to be some caveat on what happened last night. They kicked their ass.
Yeah, I think hopefully last night, and then if they can replicate it to a certain extent tonight, calm some of the fear of the upper echelon. Oh my gosh, how do they fare against that particular team? The Yankees, because the Yankees, the last go around, the last series prior to this, they beat up on the Royals. We know that. So I think that's a big part for a lot of people when it comes to matching up with them in particular. I don't know if it's just like the historical big bad Yankee thing or if it's
part of that. It's the 70s and the 80s. Yeah. It's like, it goes a long way. And earlier this season, this is the other part of it. They go on and win this series tonight with Cole Reagans on the mound. It had been likely that Lugo and Reagans, just as long as they can get their pitching lined up, would be in a 3-game series against those teams. Those would be the guys you'd want in there. The Yankees earlier this season beat them down. They kicked their ass for a huge chunk of that series. Now, the Royals salvaged a game the last time, but in the first game, 4-4 in the 7th or the 8th, right? It's a close game. Your bullpen imploded, theirs didn't. But that game was not out of control. It wasn't a 10-4 final. The Yankees didn't kick the Royals' ass. They had a close game and their bullpen imploded. Last night, they kicked the Yankees' ass. So if they go out and win a close game, beat them up, whatever, lose a close game, at least you've proven what you couldn't prove 3 months ago earlier this season, that you can hang with the New York Yankees. Also, did you see what's happening with Aaron Judge? Aaron Judge has not hit a home run. Do you know what? Not since the home run derby curse. Do you see what cursed Aaron Judge?
No.
Aaron Judge appeared in an episode of Paw Patrol in a home run derby against Chase and the other members of the Paw Patrol. And since that episode aired, Aaron Judge has not hit a home run. Appearing in the Paw Patrol home run derby has ruined Aaron Judge, apparently. I'm dead serious. He has not hit a home run since that episode aired. Specifically since that episode aired.
He says ruined him. It's flat out ruined him.
Well, from hitting home runs. Seems like he still gets on base pretty good.
I was going to say.
Seems like he's still a pretty good baseball player.
One other thing with just last night, but broader because it's a season point, that is, they are now at 80 wins. Let's also remind ourselves about just where they are, 80-66. And I don't really care who you are on this one. I don't know anybody that had them winning 80 games. We know they were going to blow past the 80 number for the last month and a half, but they're now here. But
17, 18 games to play, how many?
They are now here. Yeah, something like 16, 17. They're at 80 wins, and we all know what they did a year ago. And I there's something about seeing the nice, even number of 80, you know? Like, when they were at pacing for, at times, 94, 95 wins, 96 wins, et cetera. Like, okay, pacing's one thing. But now that it's here, and now that you see they're already at 80, and the season doesn't end till the end of the month, and today, of course, is September 11th, and maybe we'll touch on that a little bit later on in the show, and, of course, the significance of today and our thoughts with those that are impacted still to this day. I think all of us are, right, to some form or fashion. But to think about where we're at in this month, and they're at 80 wins already, is pretty remarkable.
I'm assuming you know this just like I do. Part of the reason it feels particularly remarkable with this franchise is, in the last 30 years, your entire life, Gold, the Royals have only finished at 80 wins or more 7 times. They do that less than a third of the time that they play a season. And so if that's the way it's lining up, well then, yeah, I feel particularly good about the way that they're playing right now, because it makes a big difference to say, all right, 80, one more win and you had a 500 season. Now, look, my goal for this team has changed dramatically from that exact moment for the obvious reasons. We don't care anymore about finishing above 500. Because they are actively in a playoff spot, and they're having to fight for it again. Right as the Royals started winning again, they're 4-1 or 5-1 in their last 6 games. Turns out the other teams around them aren't playing as bad of baseball either. Red Sox have started to win some games. Guardians have started to win some games. Twins, Tigers, all those teams have started to win some games again. And as a result of that, good. Because otherwise, had their losing streak or the losing ways continued, or they started playing 500 baseball, Gold, they might find themselves with a team breathing down their neck, a game back, or anything else in between there. And instead, they are once again comfortably in their wild card spot with the number of games remaining. 2.5 games up on the Minnesota Twins, and the Tigers are 3 games back of that. 5.5 games up with 17 games to play on a wild card spot is a huge lead. The Twins are the team that's actually got to be a little bit worried. Now, and they still got a 3-game lead on the Tigers and 4 on the Red Sox and Mariners.
You're just trying to run out the clock, if you will, if you're the Twins, in terms of just at some point, if you're still 3.5 up, you know, and there all of a sudden there's only 7 games left, and you just got to try to run this thing out if you're the Twins. Let me ask you this, though. It wouldn't matter in the first round anyway, and like, but if you were the Royals and you were looking much further down the road, like potential matchups, and you thought there was a chance between the Twins or Tigers, who would you rather get in the postseason? The team that's just hot right now, the Tigers, or a team like the Twins who have been fairly consistent start to finish?
Who would I rather? I'd rather the Twins be in. And the reason why is because I still think pitching in the playoffs matters a lot, and I don't want to face Scooble. Like, straight up,
sure.
That's why. The Tigers starting rotation scares me far more than the Twins starting rotation. It really just boils down to that, probably, simply. And then if you factor in the one team is hotter than the other portion of it too, well, then I'm even less interested.
And the Royals were, 7-3 against the Tigers this year?
Yeah, they were.
I mean, they did fare well.
They were worse against the Twins. That's fair.
They did fare well against them, a variety of reasons, right? But they did. They played them earlier in the month of August.
The same thing applies. In the entire American League, the Royals still have the second best run differential in the entire sport, second to that of only in the American League, second to that of only the Yankees. You're saying, well, they're at 80 wins and there's 15 games to play. The best team in the league only has 83. The Cleveland Guardians and the New York Yankees are tied for the best record in the American League, and they both only have 83 wins. So it's not like night and day. 3 games separates between you and the best record in the American League. You're just as good as all these teams. Every stat, again, once we come back around to it, supports the fact that the Royals are as good as any other team in the American League field. The problem is they might have to face a 3-game wild card series on the road before things even up for them. And that's hard. That's a big challenge. That one game thing used to, like, I like the 3-game series, But the one game thing, at least you could just chalk it up to like blind old who's good today luck. Like you're just having a good day and you get to move on to the next series and throw your normal guys out for 5 days, 7 days.
We'll always be biased here because of 2014 and the wild card game and how special that was for a variety of reasons. And a reminder, coming up at the end of the month, we're going to have the anniversary of the 2014 wild card going on. You can listen to the entire game from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. on Monday, September 30th. We'll have special content guests throughout that day. Plus, you can listen to the bottom of the 8th through the bottom of the 12th of that 2014 wild card game in the evening of Monday, September 30th as well. So we've got that going on. But like that one game will be special to us here. But in general, having multiple games, you feel like you're in the playoffs more. You know, if you're in a wild card, even if it's a wild card round, if you know you've got a best of three, so you're at least getting two games, if not three, if need be, if the series is split, you feel more a part of the postseason than if it's just one game and you lose and that's it. All right, we got to play one extra game. You know,
you get a fight.
You're actually in a series,
yeah.
You know, despite how it turned out, of course. We'll get back into the Royals here in the 11 o'clock hour talking about Tommy Pham, who just continues to look like a great acquisition for the Royals. And I think they have locked up the number one leadoff spot, that is, for the Royals the rest of the way. How could they not, I think, at this point with what they're getting from Tommy Pham? But let's talk Chiefs a little bit. We know the Bengals are coming to town a little bit later on this week. We had Nate Taylor on the show yesterday, as he joins us every Tuesday. We asked him about Kingsley Suamataia and his performance and how, okay, on the PFF grade scale, they didn't grade him very favorably. Pressure rate and all that kind of stuff. 48.9 PFF grade was the lowest grade by any offensive player. He had one pressure and a sack. His run block grade, 37.3. That's just the information that was out there from their grading system. Watching the game, just like the eye test for the casual eye, for a rookie, his performance was not much different than what we saw at times from what they dealt with a year ago.
Donovan Smith, yeah.
Like
inconsistency. Fine. Sometimes you give up a sack because your skill set or and not effort in this case, but you're a rookie who kind of beat yourself up. But this is a better test than the one previous week. There wasn't a guy in the Ravens who I think sends fear into my heart at the same level of Trey Higgins. And look, it's not TJ Watt either.
Nnamdi Madubuike or whatever. I mean, he, 13 sacks last year, something like that?
Yeah, I was a big fan of his coming out. But he also plays primarily on the inside, so they can move him over Kingsley. But he is more often than not going to have to go beat Tooney or Trey Smith or Creed Humphrey. That's the difference. This is an edge rusher. This is a guy who will line up over the top of you. And because over the next few weeks you'll get more guys like this, yeah, I'd like to see the difference between it. I also think that is a... I'll be honest, I did not watch every single second of Kingsley snaps, but I did go through and I watched the YouTube breakdown from Mitchell Schwartz. And I'm going to assume that versus any of the other people on Twitter who probably claim what they know what they're seeing in offensive line play,
right.
Mitchell Schwartz, former All-Pro right tackle. What? Hey, just real, you know, like he plays tackle. All-Pro right tackle has to say about the matter is the same thing that you should feel like. That's too low of a grade. There are some snaps he'd want back. Some run snaps he'd like back. Some pass snaps he'd like back. Where he just straight up got beat. But I guess the question I would have for any left tackle, especially a rookie in this case, is at any point did you think that the offensive line play was holding them back offensively? Was it stopping them from doing what they wanted to do in the game? No. That's all I care about for offensive line play under Patrick Mahomes.
And let's be honest, we view Kingsley differently right now as well, because as I said, I thought his performance was very similar to what we saw at times from a Donovan Smith or an Orlando Brown Jr. The difference was those guys were, and especially in Orlando Brown Jr.'s case, they were making a lot more money. You also felt like, okay, that was their best. That was their peak. They're kind of a finished product, if you will. Whereas with Kingsley, there's a lot of room to grow. He is a rookie. This was his first NFL start, big stage, Thursday night football. Yeah, it's at home. Well, the next test really for him, I agree with you. Yeah, it'll be against the defensive front of Cincy. But the next big test for me, honestly, Cody, will be when he's on the road and all of a sudden they're dealing with a silent count. And they're, you know, I guess it'll be in Atlanta for that when they're in a dome and it's pretty damn loud. And how does he handle
Atlanta's
that?
Atlanta's not really loud, but yes.
Well, it'll be loud on a Monday night game against the Chiefs. It'll be loud there indoors.
All right, that's
fair. So that'll be the big test.
Still Atlanta.
that'll be the test. Atlanta has good sports fans. And so we'll see. You know, Hendrickson is one of the better defensive linemen, but I want to see what he does on the road. But you have to feel good about what you saw right out of the gate for Kingsley. That was his debut. Like, it, you know, very easily we could have been sitting here saying, okay, he's a rookie, but, oh, that was a disaster or something. No, not at all. He held his own.
Because of the interior offensive line play, all the Chiefs ask out of their tackles, and have asked, we gave that stat before the season, Patrick Mahomes, if he is to go to the Super Bowl again this year, he will have appeared in five different Super Bowls with five different starting left tackles. I don't have to even do any historical research to tell you that's never happened before. They usually just kind of have their dude there and then maybe have to change it once, but not five different times. Now, look, it should have been four different times. It should have been Eric Fisher twice, but Rimmers had to come in the last minute. But the other two times, it was not like that at all. It was Orlando Brown Jr., and they let his ass walk. And then it was Donovan Smith, and they let his ass walk. And now it's Kingsley Suamataia. And so, like, they've moved on to the next staple of this. But because this is the opposite. I told you, and they're facing the Bengals this week, so it's relevant. Joe Burrow, and he did it again last week in week one. He is terrible at creating his own sacks. Like, you didn't have to get sacked there, Joe. What are you doing? Russell Wilson was always really bad at it. I thought, you know, there's boys in a couple of
pocket
quarterbacks.
Pocket awareness is what you're trying to say.
Well, they just step in. Sometimes it's about the, like, well, I want to make a play. I want to hold on to whatever it is. They're trying to hold on to the ball to make a play. And sometimes they make spectacular plays as a result of that. But they give their team sacks they don't do. Mahomes is the exact opposite. Even though he is not the best, even though Lamar Jackson is a better running quarterback than Patrick Mahomes, there is no quarterback in the NFL better at sack avoidance than Patrick Mahomes. So for the couple of times you screw up, so what? He'll cover you a few times anyway. The real question is, can you just, like, not be a liability for the entire game? That's all I ever really ask out of left tackle right now. And then hopefully over the season, better.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to watch his progression as we get further and further in. But I just think the starting point, like, we now know the starting point for Kingsley, and that's what's really exciting about here, where maybe he could be, is that this wasn't a starting point where we were talking about him struggling, like, okay, he's got to improve. No, if this is actually the baseline, okay, you can totally work with that.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting on Sunday because Trey, like, a lot of times, like, TJ Watt will flip sides. Max Crosby will flip. Trey Hendrickson, for the most part, is in front of that left tackle like 90-95% of the time. Kingsley's going to get every single rep almost that Trey Hendrickson's going to give him. And I guess the good thing is they don't have an inside rusher like Madubuke, the Bengals. So if Kingsley needs any help in any instance, then, which I don't think he would, based on what we've seen, it's not like the Chiefs won't be able to give it to him because the Bengals don't have that interior pass rusher.
Well, and overall, this is not as good of a defense that the Chiefs are facing as what they just faced last week.
All.
I mean, it's not even close. It's been the case for a while. Baltimore, historically, under Harbaugh, have always, you know, yeah, I know he's not a defensive mind. He's a special teams coach, yes, et cetera. But that has always been a staple there in Baltimore. We know that. And Nate Taylor alluded to this a little bit yesterday. Like, the secondary for Cincy is a big question mark. Is a big question mark. And now we know what weapons the Chiefs have they didn't have a year ago. And so, like, what do you do if you're Cincy? You're trying to balance this out. Like, in a weird way, as we sit on Wednesday, I wonder, we know the Chiefs are always going to pass the football, but this feels like a Pacheco type of assert his dominance type of game.
Yeah, it does.
Because I think you should be terrified of what the Chiefs could do down the field against your secondary game.
It's the same thing that I said last year when they had Jake Browning. The way that this, I think this is kind of why the Bengals have met, because everybody has said the Bengals are a matchup problem for the Chiefs because of the way the Chiefs play. They almost get in their own way by how they play. If the Chiefs ran the ball, 40 times,
that's too many times. How about 30?
But no, I'm telling
you. 40's a lot.
I'm telling you. Every single
Did anyone
game,
run the ball 40
you said
times
yesterday,
last week?
Cody, every single time that the Bengals have played, forget with Joe Burrow or not, it's been an 8-point game at worst. If they ran the ball 40 times, they would win by 2 touchdowns because that's how bad the Bengals' run defense is.
I do think
sometimes they play into the Bengals have coverage. Their coverage is fine. They can't tackle. That the secondary can't tackle. They get no push up front. Defensive line wise, there's nobody that's there to stuff the run. That's why last week, any carry that Ramondre Stevenson had that should have been 1 or 2 yards was 4 or 5 or 6.
Yeah, because a lot of yards after contact.
There's no, I think he had 100 in the Bengals allowed last week over 100 yards on the after contact, which is obscenely bad.
In Drew's defense, I looked it up. There were two teams last week. I didn't think anybody was going to be on this list. There were two teams last week who ran the ball 40 times. They both won. Pittsburgh ran it 41 times against the Falcons. Yeah. And Houston ran it 40 times. New England, third highest. 39 times. That's how many times they ran it against Cincinnati
quarterbacks. Jacoby Brissett.
Jacoby didn't even run like that. Ramondre ran all over him.
No, that's my point. Is like their quarterbacks, Jacoby Brissett. They knew the only way they were beating Cincy was running. We all know the Chiefs, of course, have multiple ways to beat Cincy, so it's a little bit different. But I think the running backs in general will be involved.
Pacheco.
I mean, I think the former Bengal Samaje Perine's getting a touchdown in this game. We'll just go ahead and put that bet in right now.
Your team should heed their own advice. The team with the lowest rushing attempts in Week One.
Yeah, the Bengals,
Cincinnati.
I'm not surprised.
We'll see what Chase Brown and Zach Moss can do.
The way that they do stuff, and it baffles me sometimes, because they started running the ball, believe it or not, when Jake Browning was in, and they actually started winning games because the run game was good. It had helped out the quarterback a little bit. Imagine what it could do with a guy like Joe Burrow.
All right, coming up next, we're just getting started here on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan. One trend that we wonder, can it actually continue for the Chiefs after Week One? We'll tell you what that is next. In about 10 minutes, we'll get to how kickoffs looked in the NFL after 1 week. It's just 1 week, but it was weird. There's a chance the reverse effect could be happening. We'll explain that as well coming up in just a bit. You guys can always join the conversation, 913-586-7965. That's the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. We're also streaming the show on video. Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, X.
Yeah. Matter of fact, Drew, I'll give you a chance to respond. There is a gentleman.
Oh, boy.
Every single, I would say 80% of the days on the YouTube chat, the second it fires up, a gentleman named Paul comes into that message and he says things like this. His first comment today was, "Hey, Drew, did I tell you today that Cincy sucks?" And then his follow-up text was, "Cincy sucks, Drew." And then he said, "Drew, this weekend you will have to say his name because he will be tossing touchdowns when given the name of Mahomes." So every day this guy comes in here just to tell you that Cincinnati sucks. Would you like to respond to Paul?
I'm sorry that you think of me every single day on the show. Like I really am. I wish you didn't think of me every day, because I don't deserve your attention.
Jamar, you go first. Who's going to the Super Bowl, an AFC, NFC team?
Anybody but the Chiefs.
That's why they think of you, because he's thinking about the Chiefs constantly.
I did tell you over the break, the more that I look at this matchup, every single second is
not feeling good about it, are you? I'm
not feeling very good.
I mean, there's a whole litany, maybe later in the week we'll play all of them. There must be five different cuts of Jamar Chase alone. The Pat Who thing. He won't say his name. Like, there's so many.
Burrowhead. And then we can play the James Palmer one after the game, where he's like, "Who cares? They just got their ass kicked." Do you remember what I'm talking about? Give me a Frank Clark after they beat Cincinnati again post game. Mm. Because there's all the Chiefs audio on the opposite end of it that's satisfying. This is what makes a good rivalry.
For sure.
Yes, we should think about each other's teams.
I agree.
If it's, you know, if it's that end of it. Is this the one? Oh, boy. I don't even know if I can risk playing Frank Clark on this show.
I would assume it's cut. If not, then I've got the dumb button ready. and your computer's going to get turned off.
No, nope, I'm not going to risk it.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, I'm going to play it.
They said they run the damn AFC. They lied. Hey,
you know, Frank?
They said we wasn't going to whoop that. Lied.
Ooh,
lie. Cincinnati Bengals, who? Who that? Send the ass home. That's who they is.
Send the ass home. That's who they is.
Miss Frank Clark for sure. Definitely miss Frank Clark.
I'm missing some of his comments. They need someone to take that crown back.
One thing that will be interesting to see if it continues, it's 1 week of the season, so I am very cautious of looking at any certain numbers in particular. But after 1 week, the Chiefs are tied with the most yards per play in the NFL, 7.1. What actually interested me more, though, was the Chiefs, in a week where we had so many bad quarterback performances and lackluster offensive performances that we're seeing across the entire league, the Chiefs were also tied for the most first downs by passing. You know, and for an offense that had issues passing the ball a year ago, for a league.
They ran at the fourth least.
For a league that had issues passing it in week one, the Chiefs were at the top of both against a very good Ravens defense.
A defense that did really well against the pass last year. Now, look, year to year doesn't necessarily mean anything. Could turn out the Ravens have an average pass defense, which we'll know as the season progresses, but that is not an insignificant stat. I know we try to be careful here on it's week one. Let's not extrapolate that to that's what the rest of the season will be for 17 weeks. Because by that metric, congratulations, MVP Baker Mayfield, with your 65 touchdowns, zero picks, and 7,000 yards, or whatever the hell he would throw for, if you played it out for 17 games. But this is an offense who had gotten more conservative each of the last 3 years, every year consecutively. They were conservative, got even more conservative, got even more conservative. Yards per play had gone down each of the last 3 years. Yards per game had gone down each of the last 3 years. Points per all of it had been slowly trickling down to, hadn't affected their wins for the most part. Certainly hasn't affected their ability to win a Super Bowl, as we know that. But them actually airing it out a little bit and getting more yards per play than they've gotten in years, even if it's for 1 week, that means something to me.
I'll value this, of course, way more, as I'm sure you will. You're in about 3 or 4 weeks when you've got a 4-game sample size. They would have had the Ravens and Cincy. You've already at that point would have played a road game at Atlanta. You will have much more of a sample size. But yes, the early return was pretty impressive. And as someone does point out on the text line, they're right. I mean, it also was on 50 offensive plays. The Chiefs defense was out there for like 80 plays. Yeah, just the way the game flow worked out. So to have that on a 50-play basis was pretty impressive. If there is still, as we sit in the middle of the week, heading into Sunday, another like a question you want answered. Like last week, we said we wanted to see what the number two cornerback was going to look like. Jalen Watson, we discussed that on last Friday in his performance. We wanted to see what Kingsley would look like. We already discussed him. The one outstanding question for sure that is still out there will be, will they prove that the red zone offense can still be better? Because it's great to have
these. Otherwise, they would have scored 40 points in that game against the Ravens.
It's great to see that yards per play, 7.1. Like, okay, we know that hopefully they're more explosive. You could tell even in a game where Travis Kelce wasn't as involved in the receiving game, they still look dangerous. And that wasn't something you saw a year ago. But in the red zone, you know, they had the one first and goal at the one or whatever, and right away Pacheco gets the touchdown. That was a good sign. But in general, they had the turnover they forced against Baltimore, and they settled for a field goal. There was, two penalties and then the drop pass by Kelce. Those are things last year that were a problem. And so let's see what happens on Sunday. That's like the biggest thing if you're asking to nitpick of what you need to correct off of an impressive win against Baltimore offensively. It's still going to be, all right, you get an opportunity in the red zone. Are we still seeing the drop passes? Are we still seeing the penalties that hold you back?
Because those have continued to be their Achilles heel. And in this case, I don't think it was one of those Andy's getting too cute down here. They just weren't very good at executing. And the penalties, again, got the better of them. And they'll be conservative if it's 4th and 2. They'll just let Butker put it between the uprights, especially if it's a game in which automatic. They think they're always going to win. Speaking of Butker, I'm assuming you paid attention. I told you I will not lay judgment on this rule until a month into the season. It better be October, full pumpkin spice latte season before my final judgment. I made pumpkin bread with my kid over the weekend.
See, it's here. It's here.
So we're already on board. What can I say? But the Chiefs had 6 chances to kick a ball to the Baltimore Ravens. And what did they do on all 6 times? They put the ball in the end zone. There was a 64% touchback rate in week 1 of the NFL. If you remember, it's about 10% higher than that last year. So the real question is, on the early returns, is that getting ready to get even worse? Because the Chiefs, a very smart special teams team, decided we're not going to kick it to them, and instead we'll give it to them at the 30, which is going to lead to the end of the year, maybe, resulting in having to penalize these teams further.
Well, that's the thing. We've said, looking at this during training camp, I still think to a certain extent, you know, the rule change is not going to work the way they believe. I understand that after 1 week, 57 kickoff returns.
And there was a touchdown.
We had DJ Dallas with the one return. Also had a muffed punt, which led to fumble. So, okay, you say, hey, action. Action was happening.
That's 2 plays that didn't happen under the old rules, hypothetically. I'm sure there was other
returns. Yeah, and that's a good sign. Now, the average starting field position was still the 29.4. And this goes back to the point we were trying to make before the season, which is like, hey, if I'm a coach, I'm sure the coaches are going to take notice of that very soon, if not already. And that is that, hey, wait a second. Why are we even risking this? I can just sail it through the back of the end zone and they're getting the ball at the 30. And you're telling
that's
me
a half a yard.
The average is basically that anyway. Why would I even worry about it? Right. And so that's my first thought. The other one is, Cody, you're right. You mentioned it. See, DJ Dallas of the Cardinals gets a return. Like, hey, man, we got kickoff returns. Yeah, the more you want the play to be exciting, The problem with that at the same time is if you have all of a sudden, like, let's say this week, somehow we had three kickoff returns. I'd be like, oh my gosh, the rule change works. You know, the problem with also the rule changes
is that now they're not going to kick it.
They're never going to kick it. And so
it's fighting against itself.
It is. And the only way to fix that is something they did not implement, which was a stronger penalty for touchbacks. It needs to be the 35 or the 40, honestly, to have a strong punishment. Because otherwise, yeah, if suddenly we do see more kickoff returns for touchdowns, it's great for that week or so. The next week, teams are just really not going to give you a chance. So I don't think this is going to be, quote unquote, resolved this year. Next year, they got to go to the offseason, I believe, and increase the penalty on the touchbacks if they want this really to work. If they do that, I think this could work.
So here's what I would do. I would let it play out. If I were the NFL, I would let it play out the entire year. I would let this story play itself out. Let's just say it continues as the week one trend. We get to 65% return rate or touchback rate instead of 75%. And let's say the touchdowns are equal, but that, you know, we get to see something happen 10% more of the time. Someone gets like getting tackled is more action than I got before. Even if the man gets tackled at the 29-yard line. So someone gets tackled, a ball gets fumbled every once in a while. I get some action 10% more of the time. But if teams, if we play out the entire year and it creeps up to 69, 70%, well, then I'd add 5 yards first. I'd give it another year at 35. And if that doesn't change everyone's mind, I'd either consider eliminating kickoffs forever or going to the 40. Because the only after that, you've punished too great. You've punished too far. If you're giving the ball beyond the 40 is kind of crazy.
I mean, you know, I don't like the rule to begin with. Like I wasn't a big fan of this to begin with in general. I still think like we were sitting there on Thursday night, the Chiefs game and that game in particular. And I'm like, we're still just wasting our time on these kickoffs. Like Carson Steele had the one nice return when Baltimore gave him an opportunity. There's a balance of your what fans are seeing. And we're like, hey, even if he gets tackled at the 20, it's more exciting. Fine. But if I'm a coach, I deep down on a kickoff play, my worry is not, were the fans entertained on the kickoff? It's like, did it help us win a game or not? That's what I'm getting paid to do.
But the NFL's job is to entertain you, and that's non-action play. Baseball's doing the same
thing. But coaches still can find a way with the rules to benefit their team, and the benefit might be to say, screw it, we're kicking the ball in the end zone. I mean, the Chiefs did that on Thursday night. Like, all the talk about, you know, Dave Tobe and Andy Reid in the offseason, like, hey, we think we maybe have something here with the kickoffs, we're excited. At least for 1 week, they said, screw it. We're not going to even risk it. Just Butker, just kick it through the end zone, man.
I think that that's probably where it's going, which means we're just going to eliminate the play. If you think the play's too dangerous and you have to change the math up on it, well, then the play doesn't make any sense. And you know where you'll get more action? You get more action by saving everyone's. And by the way, baseball did this and it was smart. You know what getting rid of kickoffs will do? Speed the game up. All that's doing is wasting my time. I have to watch another commercial break or watch a quarterback take a light jog out from the sideline.
The commercial break will still happen. They're not going to pass up that money-making opportunity.
You're just wasting my time. Yeah. Fine, give me the commercial break and I can hit the bathroom a few minutes sooner. Go grab my food from the kitchen because it is just wasting my time.
I was talking to our friend Scott Parks over at KNBC, of course, with Dana and Parks, and he brought up a fair point. I was on the show last week trying to explain the kickoff rule, and we all acknowledge like it's very complicated. But he said, hey, why worry about the penalty thing you and I are talking about with hey, move the touchback penalty to 35 yards? He's like, why not just have the kicker kick it from further back? Like, my answer to that, and see what you think, but my answer to that was, well, they still want teams to have the ability to have a touchback. Like, they don't want every single play. Like, they want more returns, but they also don't want to make it to where there's no way you could ever have a touchback. I'm guessing that's why, because otherwise, if you just wanted to guarantee a return every single time, wouldn't you just move the kicker back to the 25? And say screw it. You got everything is a return here.
It's all return now. Yeah,
like what?
But they don't want the same kind of return. But by that argument, you could do it. Screw the landing zone. None of it matters. You got a kicker who from the 25 can get that thing to the end
zone.
And still the landing zone exists in the everyone stands where you can't block until there. So the blocking schemes are all the same. The kicker doesn't matter, right? He's off the field. He doesn't matter. Everyone gets the same number of players blocking down on the other end. Kicker just gets his ass off the field because he's a kicker. Like, there are other ways to tempt it. They want this play in the game. So I do think they'll continue to tinker with it. But yeah, there's no perfect solution.
Why isn't that what Bill Belichick suggested too? Is that they change the position?
Maybe, I don't know.
where they're kicking from. I think.
Well, they moved it up at one point because they were, again, at that time, more worried about safety than action.
Sure, but if they, because guys are kicking it out of the end zone, so I think 5 yard or 10 yard difference, it's not going to eliminate touchbacks because the guys have, you know, the kickers have big enough legs where they can still get it there. It's just, it makes it more tempting to have that return where even if the ball is in the end zone by a yard or two, guys probably returning it.
Yeah. I know most, it's an unpopular opinion, but I still would just get rid of it. Let's be done with this, please. And I understand there's guys on the 53-man roster that make the roster because of special teams. I'm sure there's coaches out there that are listening, whether you coach in college or high school or used to whatever, and you're like, this is crazy. Trust me, if it was my choice, they would go back to what it was in 2009. We know that's not happening because of the safety issues. They're not going back to that. It's either this new kickoff with some tweaks is going to work, or they're getting rid of him. So we can decide. Like, I think it's still a giant waste of time because kickoffs are never going to be what they once were.
Speaking of tweaks that could absolutely help a game, did you see Rob Manfred, my new hero? I've never said anything bad about Rob Manfred that I can recall.
He's on a little bit of a heater.
He is, actually. I trashed him for a long time for hating baseball, and I stand by all those previous comments. But he has been doing a much better job improving the sport over the last couple of years. Rob Manfred was speaking on a CNBC boardroom game plan event, and in that event, he seemed to make it very clear that baseball needs a national media rights strategy and to move away from regional sports networks to expand the game. And all I can say is, thank God. I don't know how long this is going to take or if even he can convince the 30 MLB owners to be on board with this. But at the very least, if the commissioner is saying it out loud, this is closer than we ever have been to doing this. There's a couple of reasons why you should care in Kansas City. One, I know you all hate getting on the Bally's app, paying the $20 for the rest of the month just so you can see the Royals play. There are still some of you that are holding out and just have to stick to the national Fox game or the postseason or a million other things, and that stinks. Having a national media rights deal is going to make this stuff more accessible to you. Not necessarily free, but more accessible to you than it has ever been. But also, this would be the first time in Major League Baseball since, I don't know, dudes with made-up names from the 1800s where baseball actually tried to do something to even the revenue playing field, because a national media rights deal would mean the Yankees don't get $100 million for their TV deal and the Royals get 30. It would mean everybody gets 55. And, oh my God, what a difference that would make.
Well, so the general idea of getting rid of the regional networks and having a national rights deal, whether it's something where we're all watching on Amazon Prime and you just, you know, you add it to your Amazon Prime subscription, I'm all about that, of course. I think that'd be incredible. There was reports about that with the whole Diamond Sports Group thing that's been going on with bankruptcy and everything. So, of course, this is a great thing. I think you're being a little too optimistic on
that they'll actually do it the way I want it.
On the last part there, because yeah, if I'm the Yankees, and we just kind of know how some of the bigger markets operate, if they had a national package, I don't think all 30 are just splitting it evenly. That would be perfect. And especially
Why wouldn't it be like that?
As people in Kansas City, of course, that'd be great.
Because imagine drawing the invisible line of how you decide who gets more.
The argument would be if you're the Yankees, the Dodgers, or whatever, they would still argue that they're bringing more to the table in terms of their market. So I think nationally is the way to go, but I'm not convinced that everybody's just splitting it, you know, 30 ways. I just don't believe that.
Can we do it the way these conferences do when they add a new member? So for hey, Yankees, we understand this is going to hurt the old pocketbook for a little bit. So for the first 5 years of our new national media rights deal, you will get a bigger share. You'll get your bigger conference share, let's say, for 5 years while you adjust to what that new number will be. And in that time, in 5 years, no worries. Have you seen what sports rights are going for? We're going to clean up on these. Don't you worry about that. We'll make you whole. It's going to be more money for everyone. Baseball needs a cup. It's never going to be even. They're never going to a salary cap, salary floor system in which things are totally even. It's just not happening in baseball, and I accept it. But every small thing, occasional things you can do that even the playing field, even 3%, 5%, I'm all on board for. Because right now, the economics of baseball are so dramatically different on one side versus the other. The Yankees are three games better than the Royals this year. The Yankees are spending $310 million on their team. And that's probably before they give $600 million this offseason to Juan Soto. The Royals, meanwhile, are spending $110 million on their team. A third of that on their team. If you even the playing field, you can't convince me. These big-time organizations get away with not being as good of an organization sometimes, but competing more regularly just because of a dollar. Just because, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen in the NFL. Obviously, the Bengals can't compete the same because they refuse to pay people.
We'll get to that later.
But generally speaking, like, the economics are screwed up. They're screwed up. You got to get them closer.
So now hearing it from Rob Manfred, I'll go back also to John Sherman's comments. I don't know if we have the individual cut. I know we had the whole interview, but John Sherman was on with Vern 2 months ago, and they sat down, and one of the things John Sherman brought up was kind of the TV package, and he acknowledged, like, it's still something that's probably not going to happen right away. But now hearing this is clearly what owners are hearing from the commissioner's office, what owners want to do as well. I just don't know if it's necessarily going to still be a level playing field even with that. But if it means for fans, most importantly, that the access to their television package doesn't have blackouts anymore. I mean, that was the one thing that I know John Sherman mentioned when he was talking to Vern, was that, like, it's, you know, how crazy it is that if you're in Oklahoma, you can't watch the Royals. What? Like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that is insane. It makes no sense. And so
no other sport
fixing
does
the blackouts is a huge part of it. But if they had a national platform right now, we know with the blackouts, you can go on MLB TV, but you can't watch the Royals if you're in the blackout area. But I still use MLB TV all the time to watch any game. That app and everything, a VPN. That app and everything is totally fine.
Yes,
but the blackout's the problem. So whether it's just improving their app and partnering up that way, whether it's getting Amazon on board where they already have the app and platform and the huge viewership base ready to roll.
But if you just agree with FS1 that we're going to air Major League Baseball games, it could still be like how NFL games work. In this region, you're getting Royals most of the time, right? Because in this area, like in Kansas City, when baseball comes on Fox Sports 1, you're getting the Royals. Why are you getting the Royals? For the same reason that if you are watching NFL at noon in LA, you get the Rams. Or if you're watching the NFL on CBS at noon in Kansas City, you get the Chiefs. Or if you're watching, you get the Eagles. You get the teams that are regionally interesting to you. Now, occasionally, you're going to run into a problem. Every once in a while, your team's not going to be on the screen because there's going to be a regional game that matters more depending on if you're an I or whatever. But just as long as you're in Iowa and I have the option to purchase the ticket package that exists for that, and in Kansas City, the Royals game is always on FS1, well, then it shouldn't matter that these regional TV rights deals make the pie a more equitable end. Look, I'm probably, he said one thing in a press conference, I'm like, oh my God, please, Rob.
That's not
I'm
happening
begging.
At the end of the season necessarily.
No, it will take a little while, and I understand this idea still that, you know, people don't want to pay additional money for it. Sadly, that's just where the streaming services and all these things are going.
It's not going to be free.
The NFL's, like, this Thursday night, Miami versus, I can't remember who they're playing.
Bills.
Good game. The Dolphins versus the Bills on Thursday Night Football. You better have Amazon Prime or you're not watching it. Now, a huge chunk of Americans already have Amazon Prime, so you're not like, well, I don't have to pay it, versus the number of people who subscribe to Peacock. But you're just going to, like, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Peacock. If you want to watch those standalone games, you're just going to pay the price. That's the thing baseball still needs to do, though, is will they make the local games free? I can always catch the Chiefs if I'm in Kansas City. Making people pay outside the market, we're used to that. In Kansas City, can I watch a Royals game just on TV?
That's what I want. Well, I just don't, I mean, on Fox, even with this, four, though, that, but that's, see,
Fox,
because,
FS1,
because there's so many games.
FS1,
I mean,
would be my
the Royals, now. It's going to be on a... Yeah, but FS1, I mean, it's going to be on a streaming app one way or the other, even with the national deal. Like with the
Amazon or
whether
Apple
it's Amazon, Apple, or whatever, the Royals games long term are going to be on something that anybody can just have an app for. The question will be if it's built into something like you're already paying Amazon, do you have to pay an extra $5 a month for the Royals games, or is that built into your membership because it's Amazon and it is what it is? Or is it like Apple?
They don't charge me right now.
Apple charges you extra. If you want to watch MLS games through Apple TV Plus or whatever, it doesn't, you have to pay extra for that. I don't know what the price is.
Yep.
Right? But
so it's like a pay-per-view title. Yeah.
So I don't know if people wouldn't like that still, but that's where things are at. We'll see. This is something that I'm sure in the offseason we'll hear more about. Up next, we get to the 11 o'clock hour. One thing about the quarterbacks that is happening across the NFL and why the Royals have their leadoff man.